Good evening, everyone. This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio. You're all going to have to excuse me a little bit tonight. I got a little bit of a sore throat and a cold, but we're going to do this anyway. We've been following many things this week, and most particularly I've seen all these emails coming out about support S-178, and the name of this piece of crap is to prevent elder abuse and exploitation and improve the justice system's response to victims and elder abuse and exploitation cases. Now, you'd think there would be something in these 25, 26 pages that would refer to these predatory guardianships, the corruption in these probate courts, to these terrible conservatorships that leave people destitute. Not a freaking word. Not a word anywhere. This is one of those fluff and buff bills that was put out. We have got laws in every state and federally against wire fraud, internet scams, phone scams, all of that. And that's what this bill is all about, creating. It was basically creating and further empowering the Justice Department, law enforcement, medical personnel, psychiatric personnel, APS, any type of social services, giving them even more power than they already have over individuals. But it's all geared towards this wire fraud. There is nothing in there to stop them from the human trafficking that's going on. There is nothing in there to penalize them and criminalize them for what they are doing to people under the protection of these tribunals that we call administrative courts. There is nothing in there that cites as a crime the activity by these people, the theft of estates, the loss of income, rendering people indigent, locking them up in these homes, chemically restraining them, isolating them from their families. There's not a freaking word in there anywhere about it. Now, what is it you think you're supporting? What is it you think this piece of garbage is going to do? It's not going to do anything. What it is going to do, however, is the section on pages 5 and 6 that talks about the further growth of these monstrous agencies and agents, lawyers and guardians. It's going to empower them further, give them more protection. And every time you try to go after them, they're going to lean back on this bill and say, under this bill, we can do this. Now, the bill was only about wire fraud, but, you know, we can still co-opt this and use it to our advantage to protect us against you. And I've told you and told you, the only time the DOJ will get involved is when the government has to protect itself from you. That is the only time. And the only other time it will become active is if it feels like it got cheated out of some money. Then it will go out there and go after that. But as far as you go, you can twist in the wind. Call your Secretary of State's office. And if they're honest with you, which the one here in Minnesota was, Lori Swanson's office, said specifically, their office is not there to protect you or do anything for you. It is to protect the state from you. Now, get that through your heads. These people are not working for you. You just simply give them a paycheck. But anyway, we'll talk about that more later on in the program. Our guest this evening has been with us before, and y'all know him. We all love him. And Danny Tate has written a book called Fugitive from Injustice. And I have a copy, and I've ordered about four more because I'm sending it to senators and representatives with a little note you need to take pay attention to what's happening here. What this man has been through, a gifted composer, songwriter, doing great, stumbled, fell off the tracks a couple of times, like who hadn't done that, and had his own brother come down on him and steal everything from him he could get his hands on, and is still doing it, still doing it. Now, I've been looking into a lot of things concerning this, and hopefully I can be of some help here, just maybe some advice later on. But anyway, our guest tonight is Danny Tate. And by the way, everybody, Danny wrote our promo music for this show. So all of you that sent me emails and said, God, that music is great, you can thank Danny for it. Danny, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Marty. It's so good to be here again. And I tell you what, I'm fired up just after listening to your opening statement about this new, I guess, is it legislation? Is that what we call it?
Yeah.
My goodness.
I'll tell you, Danny, when I kept getting emails from people saying, oh, you need to back this bill, Marty. You need to get out there and back this bill. So I printed it off and went through it and started backtracking it through code and title, because that's always where the real story is. What you see on that paper in front of you, that's what they that's the schmooze job. But the real story is in that code and title that they changed. And basically all they are doing, Danny, is setting up another obstacle like they did down in Florida when they passed that Pasadomo bill here last year, and it created this new bureaucracy that must, underlined in capital letters, must be headed by a member of the Bar Association. So they effectively completed the circling of the wagons and made sure nobody can get past that obstacle to get into a regular court of law. And, you know, and we see this happening in state after state after state. And people end up, they work their butts off trying to get this legislation passed, and they don't realize that even once that bill hits the table, whether it's state or federal, it can be altered a gazillion times, and they don't have to tell you. And when it gets passed, and you're jumping up and down and cheering, what you don't know just yet is that what got passed bears no resemblance to the bill you wrote. And this is one of the little tricks of government. I'm sorry, I get off on this stuff and get crazy. Anyway.
Well, I'm glad you are. I'm glad you are. The same thing happened in Tennessee, Marty. You know, they were, of course, advertising. They had rewritten the entire conservatorship code. And then when it came down to it, all they did was strengthen the position of the state and the people who were the bad guys, as I call them. And, you know, they allowed the probate judge in Davidson County to appoint his own oversight committee. So what did he do? He brings in the most popular and politically connected attorneys in Nashville and appoints them as his oversight committee, and then he gives them all a lucrative conservatorship, million-dollar conservatorships, as a reward for being his oversight committee.
Oh, for God's sake. I'm so sick of this stuff, Danny. It just gets worse. The more people fight against it, the worse. And they are blatant now about setting up these scams, these protection rackets. They don't care if you know, because you can't do anything anyway. Who's going to stop them? Right. And that's one of the things I told somebody here recently. If I don't see anything else done before I croak, I want to see the bar disbarred. It is an illegal assembly. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. Well, I was going to say, listen, I have, and I've actually got some movement going on in Tennessee, where we're trying to, what I have proposed, and I went to the governor first, Governor Haslam of Tennessee, who liked the idea, and he's not an attorney in real life, you know, I mean outside the governor's office, but it is to a sunset the Board of Judicial Conduct, which is this group of judges that oversee judges, and it's obvious that this does not work. And also the Board of Professional Responsibility, which is a group of attorneys overseeing the attorneys. Listen, the profession of the judge and the attorney, it is abundantly clear, and the only people that will argue against it are attorneys and judges, that they cannot self-govern. And I have proposed that we bring in a group of trained citizens to oversee these people. As it is, these boards are not only ineffective, but they are a waste of tax dollars. And when you bring that to the attention of the non-attorney legislators and other public servants, it's like a slam dunk. But then the TBA, the Tennessee Bar Association, will fight it tooth and nail, throw money at everyone, to try to override this. But this is what I'm working on. And here's the reason I say it, Marty. I tell you what, you bring in a group of citizens overseeing judges, we're kind of in sweeping them, doing the same things with attorneys. Let me tell you how fast they will clean up their act.
Did we lose you, Danny?
You know, like what we're doing is, Marty, I feel like we're begging for the scraps that are falling from the table when we deserve to be dining at the king's table.
There you go. There you go. And I agree, Danny. And this is the whole thing. You know, I brought this up as an analogy several times. When we have the Supreme Court coming out and saying that prosecutors can lie to win their case,
yeah.
You don't have a case
yes.
if you have to lie. And
yeah.
when we have the Supreme Court coming out and saying we have qualified immunity, there is no such thing in this country. The law is applied equally. But we have qualified immunity because if we don't give judges qualified immunity, they might be afraid to hand down certain decisions. Well, if they're within the law, they should have no fear. And
mm-hmm.
I liken this to bank robbers getting together and saying, look, if you're going to prosecute us, we're just not going to rob any more banks. You know,
yeah.
and that's basically what it is. And you are
Bingo.
Putting the people that belong to the same union, and the Bar Association is a closed union. And you are taking those people and putting them in charge of other union members and deciding whether or not they committed an error. And according to the rules they themselves construct. And of course
Correct.
They have. But they always find nothing's wrong. Nothing's wrong. Oh no, they
well,
really didn't.
And
do
then when
wrong.
They do, it's a it, you know at best it's a public censure, which means they publish something in a back page of a newspaper saying, okay, we publicly censor this person. Then it's business as usual. Well, there is no oversight. It's,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. There is no oversight. You cannot put thieves and crooks in charge of thieves and crooks and think you're going to change the law. It's
Bingo.
Not going to happen. You
Bingo.
Know, and that is exactly what the Bar Association represents. It to me, it is the most highly criminalized organization in the country. And it has
It's an organized crime syndicate.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And you are never in more danger than when you step in a courtroom in this country of any kind. Now, as far as these administrative tribunals go, that person sitting in there that we lovingly call a judge is not. If you go to Cornell Law and look up the definition of the administration court, it says that the person sitting there is sitting in place of, but is not a judge. You go to legal terminology.
Wow.
A judge is a judge in a court of law. An administrative executive sits in place of, but is not a judge in an administrative tribunal. They don't have to know the law. They don't have to have any legal background because all they're doing is working from code and statute. You can't bring the law into an administrative tribunal because it does not apply. And court and tribunal have two different legal meanings. A court means you're operating under the common law of the land. A tribunal means a special set of regulations, statutes, and codes. And those are always erected to bypass and do an end run around constitutional rights and provisions. And this is the way it's set up. This is why they are set up. How else, Danny, how else could they take the living person into a probate tribunal? Probate becomes active only upon presentation of the death certificate.
Correct.
So what is being declared a ward of the state? It is a civil death. You are dead in the law.
That's
and
it.
When that happens, when you are declared dead in the law, now you have no constitutional rights. This is how they do this to you specifically so you have no rights to the common law.
Well, I tell you, the probate is improper venue for adjudicating this whole law or this whole
right.
code. It's, you know, a probate court, as you already stated, this is where the deceased estate is liquidated and divided amongst the heirs, you know, simplifying it. Now, so it is a court of liquidation, yet
yes.
it has been vested with this a power and authority to adjudicate a law of preservation, which is a conservatorship/guardianship, you know, and it doesn't work. Probate does not have a preserve gear. They only have a liquidate gear, and it
yes.
is utterly improper venue to be carrying this out. It doesn't
well,
work
other,
as,
no,
as we
well,
see
it works
time
for
and time
them.
Again.
It
oh,
works
yes,
for them,
yes,
Danny.
Correctly. Yeah, yeah.
But
exactly,
it,
Marty.
It works real good for them. But these are, you know, the things I have discovered in digging through all of this. have just absolutely blown me away. I think it's absolutely incredible that this stuff goes on the way that it does, and nobody in our government actually has the cojones to stand up and try to stop it. I need to make a statement here. Our call board is full. I'm sorry, I'm getting messages from people that they can't get on the board to listen. It's full. We have 50 callers lined up on there listening by phone. I'm sorry, you'll just have to wait for an opening. Otherwise, if you can still tune in without doing that, you know, get on your computer, whatever. But anyway, we're doing the best we can here. Now, the other thing was the probate exception. I kept seeing this everywhere, Dan. Oh. I kept seeing it everywhere. And so yes. I went to the Supreme Court, and I found the probate exception. And what it says, the reason we can't get any of these cases in front of the Supreme Court of the United States is, number one, you have to be a member of that bar. See, here's our monopoly work here. And to be a member, you have to have 4 years in good standing wherever you've been practicing law, and then you apply to them, and they decide whether or not to accept you, blah, 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 blah. But, of course, if you go back to 2013 and the new rules, they set up one in there that they will no longer hear pro se cases, which virtually every probate case is these days. They won't hear – but see, they haven't heard a pro se case since 1974. And the guy who came in front of him then won hands down 9-0. They haven't heard one since then, but they're no longer going to – now, why would they put that in there at this late date? That's because people were trying to get to the Supreme Court with these probate cases. So they come out with this probate exception thing, and what it says is that whatever is in motion in the state – if it's in a court, whether it's in a court or it's in one of these administrative tribunals, the minute you go in front of that court, the state takes possession. That court takes possession of you and your property, and they have full control over it. Mm-hmm. And they said as long as it was in process in the state, it was the state's business, because all business in the state belongs to the state, and so do the residents, your property. You got it? Mm-hmm. And so therefore, they can't go there. I'm always amazed, Danny, at the crap they come up with.
Oh, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
And the Supreme Court justices would support it. You know, it goes back to the Indian Removal Act of 1830. As a result, the Cherokee Nation of Cherokee versus Georgia, I believe it was. Anyway, they tried to go to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said they couldn't hear it because basically it was determined it was nothing but a mass guardianship, and quote unquote they said they are as a ward to the guardian. So the Cherokee Nation had no legal standing to come before the Supreme Court.
Do you know?
It's just another example of what you just said.
Yeah, some years ago, a fellow contacted me from D.C. named Kenneth Cheney, and he was a lobbyist for the Indian nations out here in the Midwest, the Sioux tribes and Kiowa, Iowa, and all them. And he had contacted, I've known for my research, and he said the man was ill, and he said, I need help with this. And this was 2010 when they were coming with all the vaccines. And he said, can you help me with this? Because these people think they're getting a good deal, and I know they're not. So I did all this research, put it together, sent it to him. He said, could you write a letter to the chiefs? I said I would, and I did. Well, anyway, but in my research, Danny, I find where Bill Clinton issued an executive order which said, and I didn't understand at the time because I wasn't dealing with this just yet, this guardianship thing, that the federal government and the state governments had to view the Indian nations as though they were their guardians. They were our wards. We have to look after them. And I didn't realize what he was actually telling them. Mm-hmm. You disempower these people. You take everything from them. We have declared ourselves their owners. And this is what happens in these. A lot of times when I'm talking to people that are new to this, they keep saying, well, they can't do this. They can't. Well, in a green world, they couldn't. But in this world, they do it all day, every day. And this
all day,
is
every
human
day.
Trafficking. Yes.
Yes.
It's human trafficking.
It's incredibly frustrating. As I try to articulate this issue to people who are compassionate people, caring people who realize something is wrong, but they haven't been directly impacted by it, and they want to, they are supporters, but it's
right.
hard for them to wrap their brains around the fact they I'm constantly hearing that they can't do that. Yes, they can. It happens routinely, daily, all across this nation. It's an epidemic of heinous proportions.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And Danny, look at your own case. Look at your own case. When I read through your book, it didn't happen to me, but I'll tell you, reading your book, I got so damn mad I couldn't stand it.
Thank you.
One of the things that really bothered me was when you were at this Vanderbilt facility and how they twisted your words, how they these people absolutely falsified these statements, and you have no defense against that. None.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they take this into court and say, well, these experts said, these psychiatrists said.
Yeah.
Well, how much did you pay him? How much did you pay him to do that?
Oh, my God, and, you know, the tens of thousands.
Yeah, and it just, at this psychiatry thing in this absolutely just torques my butt. This is a, it is widely claimed to be a false, a pseudoscience. Everything is based on observation, and that person sitting there calling themselves a psychiatrist or a therapist can say whatever they want to say, and you cannot refute it. They can make any observation they want to, whether they actually observed that or they didn't, and it's written in stone. You know, here a few years ago, Danny, we had that case where they had demanded copies of the court transcript and all this, and somehow in there was a letter from the court psychiatrist, which turns out they'd used this same man hundreds of times. And he had never seen the victim, never. But based on what APS workers told him and the guardian told him and social services told him, he said this person was bipolar and had all these problems, had never seen him. And at the bottom of it, he writes, if this doesn't work, tell me what you need and I'll write something else up.
This sounds
right. Honestly,
and you know,
I'll write something
else.
Go ahead.
One of the things in my book, you know, and I've just, my own, I've had to do my own investigating into my own case. You know, I went down and I got the medical records from Vanderbilt long after, you know, this these involuntary commitments there and involuntary medications. And the first day I showed up in court for my a hearing on a conservatorship, which I didn't even know what the heck a conservatorship was, but they had already, unbeknownst to me, frozen my bank accounts and appointed my brother conservator in an ex parte hearing. And they waited until he had seized all my bank accounts, even in other states, which that's a whole nother issue we ought to talk about sometime. But anyway, I had no money to hire an attorney. And so I walk in. There are all my siblings who I hadn't seen in years. And, you know, that was almost 10 years ago. I hadn't seen them since except in a courtroom, one of them, my brother, and only in a courtroom. You know, here he was having me adjudicated, completely incompetent to, you know, a babbling idiot who can't tie his own shoes, yet he lived 210 miles away, and the only time I ever saw him again after that day was in court a handful of times. But anyway, there was no motion before the court for involuntary commitment. I was unrepresented by an attorney, and yet I was led away. The law requires two doctor's reports. They had one utterly insufficient doctor's report. I'm led out of the courtroom in handcuffs, escorted by Metro Police, and they broke my wrist in the process of handcuffing me. So I'm taken to the – well, it turned out to be a blessing in disguise. They took me to the emergency room before they went and took me to the psych hospital around the corner. And the doctor in there has to write what he perceives as your emotional and mental condition. And this doctor in the emergency room, who has no idea that I'm on my way around the corner for an involuntary commitment to the lockdown psych ward, wrote, "He seems perfectly normal. Everything's this, you know, he's fine. He's this,
yep.
You know," using medical terminology. Well, an hour later, at the intake report at the Vandery Psych Hospital, you know, listed just about every mental illness in the book. And even the guy said that this was collaborated with my brother, who sat there and told the psychiatric doctor, you know, what was wrong with me, according to him. And yet an hour earlier, another doctor had said, "I'm fine." And so you see the hypocrisy, the contradiction. You know, none of this holds up except under the scrutiny of those who are doing it to you.
Yes.
Out in the real world, truly sane minds, they see the utter madness in what these people are doing.
Well, you know, Danny, one of the things I've harped on again, too, is that as a country, we have seen our manufacturing base disappear. Everything is shipped in. It's second rate, third rate. We don't know what the hell we're eating. We've now got a Secretary of Agriculture who is going to cut all the funding to small family farms to get rid of them. We've got all this going on. But my point is, we have nothing left of value to sell or trade. The only thing that is left is us, and they are buying, selling, and trading and selling bonds on us. It started with the private prison system, and they were selling bonds, and they still are on Wall Street.
Wow.
Merrill Lynch was the biggest purveyor of labor bonds. Prisoners, this is why we put so many people in jail. This goes back to Ashcroft during Bush Cheney, when he issued all of these straight across the board, you have to sentence them this. It brought in this corporate prison system where they guarantee prisoner X will be there this number of days. And we guarantee we will keep the prison at least 95% full. So you see people going to jail for all kinds of things. But this kind of set this buying and selling people as a commodity, as the last thing this country has of any value. And behind it came this APS, CPS thing, which CPS was already in place. It was already recognized as a highly criminal organization, very lucrative. They established APS to mimic it and set the same process in motion. And all of it is cash incentive, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's all tied to the federal government. They get funding for the number of kids they drag through CPS. They get federal funding tied to the number of adults they drag through this probate mess. And the people that are put into nursing homes, the people that are put into like psychiatric facilities, they get funding for every bit of this. So it's a cash incentive system. We are being bought and sold.
Yes,
and
it
right
is.
Now,
it is. Yes.
Go ahead. Go ahead,
I was
Danny.
Just going to say it's an invitation to corruption because it, just like you said, it's cash incentive based on body count.
Yes. Yes. Based on, but and it's a quota system, Danny. They have to quarterly, whether it's APS or CPS or whatever, they have to estimate the number of bodies they're going to bring through the system for the next quarter.
Yeah.
If they don't do that, they don't get any funding. If they have to raise it each quarter by 5 to 7%, and if they don't make the quota, then their funding gets shorted, and all of it, you know, like I say, it's all cash. It's all cash. And this goes straight into the general treasury of every state with no strings attached.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing, adults, when they nail you, and the perk on this is the people that do it, in this case, your brother, it's self-enrichment. It's a parasitic life. These are parasites that are bleeding this country dry. Now, here, I think it was 6 years ago, people over 60 own 75% of all the real wealth in this country. That means they absolutely owned their property. They had little to no debt. They had investments, this, that, something else. But they had, they owned, you know, 75% of the real wealth. Now, here we are about 7-8 years later. People over 60 now own 55%. And you have to look at that for what it represents. But the people being targeted most often now are people like you that had something sizable, that had something that had a lot of value to it, and somebody else decided they wanted it. And so when this system starts, when they start this process, as the targeted individual, as you found out, you've got no defense, because the whole thing is set up to leave you powerless, to leave you without any resources, to leave you without any means. If you could afford it, you know, did want an attorney, you couldn't afford one, which is right where you found yourself. And then in these tribunals, they're supposed to give you notice of hearing, but if they don't, nobody says, well, so what? We didn't. And or they lie and say they did, but they can't show that they did. But the violation of rights and just the law itself. But this is what highlights the fact that this has nothing to do with law. If you attack it from the angle of law, you're going to lose. You have to attack it for what it is. It is an artificial creation meant to disempower you, take away your rights, and render you basically as a walking dead person.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yep.
You know, Marty, may I interject this here? It's real important because I think there's probably quite a few people from Nashville listening in tonight. Nashville is prime human real estate. And especially because of the music business and the fact that it's filled with songwriters who are the possessors of intellectual properties, in other words, songs, in other words, copyrights that generate income in perpetuity. My copyrights still that started in 1983, the first song I ever had recorded, still generates significant income 35 years later. And we've got a city filled with these people, songwriters, that have these intellectual properties that generate income in perpetuity. It is prime human real estate for these predators doing this. And, for instance, gentleman Jim Reed, he died in 1964. Do you know that his estate is still tied up in the same probate court that put me in conservatorship, quote unquote? You know, here we are. How many years later is that? 53 years later?
Mm-hmm.
And because his estate and his songs still generate $400,000 a year in royalties.
Yep. And who's getting that money, Danny?
Not me.
Yeah,
they are.
Exactly.
The bad guys are getting it. And I always call them the bad guys because that's what they are. They are the bad guys, the crooks.
Parasites.
Yet they're officers of the court and judges.
Yeah, exactly. This just all just upsets me to a point you can't even imagine. We have been battling this. I have for 7 years, just been in it, digging and running. And I go through the law, and I don't pretend to be a lawyer. I don't give people legal advice, but I come across things that strike me out. I've never seen presented in a court of law. And these are basically comes under torts, like tortious interference with an inheritance.
Mm-hmm.
And this would would apply to you. Because, you know, I think I asked you at one point, of all the money that your brother has stolen from you and these attorneys, how much of it was put back since he's managing your estate because you're incompetent? You know, like you say, you can't even tie your own shoes. How much has been put back for your children? How much has been put away for their college?
You know, other than what I already had put away before, I'm unaware of anything having been put away for my daughters. No, it all went to the crooks.
Yes.
It all went to the bad millions. Mm-hmm. And it's still going, by the way. The people need to know that to this day, for 10 years, my song royalties have gone to the circuit court clerk in Nashville, Tennessee, and distributed now to the attorneys. And do you realize I'm a member of BMI? BMI is what's called a performance rights organization. They collect song royalties from radio airplay, television airplay, movie airplay. They have, and my contract with them states they are my attorney, in fact, but instead of fighting on my behalf, they have, without contest, surrendered my royalties for 10 years. Now, let me tell you this. When Francis Preston was head of BMI, this would not have happened. But the people running BMI today, and I hope they're listening, these people are more concerned about Wall Street than they are Music Row. They're more concerned about lining their own pockets and the pockets of their board of directors than they are their songwriters. And songwriters, listen into this, because, and let me tell you this, and this is going to be coming out in the press soon. When Francis Preston died, this same probate court in Nashville allowed them to do the same thing to her. And it is godforsaken. And I tell you what, I'm going to be taking on BMI and Music Row next as soon as I'm done with these probate crooks.
Oh, I'm telling you. Now, Danny, what all is going on there in Nashville?
You
said there'd been some ripples in the water there.
Yes, there are. Well, we've had a judge go down, and had it not been for, an aware and concerned citizen in the press, this would have gone buried, because the district attorney who's involved in it, and that will be coming out this week, is participated in the cover-up because he's got unclean hands. And what we have is we've got a judge and a bunch of attorneys, and where they're exchanging sex for favorable rulings and cases being dismissed and court fees disappearing. They're going on sex vacations, and the judge is having sex in his chambers with these women.
God.
And yes. And
we lost you there.
You lost me?
There you go. You're back.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm not where I was. Anyway, it was
okay.
They are and the thing about it is, this one judge, and he had to resign. They didn't impeach him, which I think is very telling. They should have. He was allowed to resign, but he had to. He's in prison, right? I mean, he's in jail. Well, he's been indicted for federal charges for corruption, bribery, all kinds of things. And let me tell you, this guy is actually a choir boy compared to some other judges that I know about in Tennessee and have knowledge of. And please keep your attention on, because, folks, we need to springboard what is going on in Tennessee to the rest of the nation.
I agree. And, you know, it's kind of happening here and there. You know, out in Las Vegas, they're nailing some of these predators.
Yes.
Like, they got that April Parks out there.
Yes.
But then there's people at the top, like that Jared Schaefer, that they just can't seem to do anything about. They just kind of skip over him and go to other people. You have to wonder what kind of goods he's got on everybody that they won't even say his name. That always concerns me when that happens. Again, I go back to this bogus bill. It's bogus because, like I say, and these people that are passing it around, I got three emails sitting here, Danny, from people that say, oh, it's the best we've got and we've got to support it. No, hell, you don't. You call these senators on this crap. That's what you do.
Yes.
You can get right on my website, and it'll take you right to all the contact information for every senator and for every congressman.
Oh, excellent.
And you get these
excellent
people, and it's, let's see, it's Senator Grassley, Senator Blumenthal, Tillis, Klobuchar. I could have told you she wasn't going to do anything.
Yeah.
Cornyn, Leahy, and Bennett, and Dianne Feinstein. Send these people a letter and tell them that you expected, when a bill is titled and then represented to be improve the justice system's response to victims in elder abuse and exploitation cases, that they missed the boat.
Yes.
What they should have done was gone after these guardians, these unconstitutional statutes. And that's another thing I keep telling people under the non-delegation doctrine, that I've heard people in these tribunals say, well, we're working with the authority of the Congress. No, they cannot cede you power and authority they do not have.
Yeah.
No, that can't happen. And this is called the non-delegation doctrine, and I always get, oh, I never heard of such a thing. Oh, really? But what it means is, like I say, they cannot arbitrarily permit someone, give them permission to set these systems up. Now, what I want to know is why in Washington, D.C., there are 6 lobbyists for every senator and every representative. And, you know, why are these – they crawl across D.C. like rats on a garbage dump with bags
yes,
of money, you know?
Yes.
They do. You know they do.
Well,
and they run in with bags of money.
Corruption.
Yes, it is. Now, you know what I think is every time they donate to a political campaign or they make a political contribution – what should happen is that senator or that representative should have to claim that as personal income and pay taxes on it because they are getting direct benefit of that money. And this would kind of end, you know, taking all the corporate donations and, geez, I owe so-and-so because they gave me $250,000.
Yeah.
You know, but you see, they're not going to do that either. But we have allowed this system, and I say allowed because for a long time people sat silently and didn't say anything.
That's exactly right.
And it took several people getting caught in this system. And Danny, how many people have you heard say, well, they told me I was the only one. It was an isolated incident. Well, nobody else had told them anything like that.
Yeah.
I told Franklin's office here in Minnesota.
That's what I thought for the first 3 years. I thought I was an anomaly in an isolated situation. But they keep you isolated, and that's what they feed into you.
Right. Exactly. And then, like I say, I've called every senator representative I could think of, but I've called Senator Franken's office and got, of course, his staffer, because you can't talk to Mr. Franken. He's busy. And I have talked to him at different times. But anyway, when I brought this up, I said, you know, we have this problem in the state. This is what's happening. I've never heard of such a thing. Well, maybe you need to get out of the office a little more. Well, it must be an isolated incident.
Kidding.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't.
Oh, no.
Well, nobody else has said anything. I said, what you mean is you didn't take a report of anybody else saying anything. And then that way you can feign ignorance. You don't know anything about it. Nobody told you. And I said, what can we do about this? Well, you know, the senator is busy and he's dealing with really important issues. I said, really? People's lives aren't important? Is that what you're telling me? You know, and this is this thing. And the other thing, Danny, I hear, too, is if you, which I have spoken a few times in front of the Minnesota legislature, and I had people say, now, look, when you go in there, you be nice. What? you be nice. Well, you know, I am. And you be civil when you go in there and don't go off on a rant. Oh, I wouldn't. And if you go in there and you're not nice, Marty, they're going to get mad and they're going to retaliate. Really?
Yeah.
So the last time I went in, I'm looking at these jerks sitting up there, and you only get like 3 to 5 minutes to speak because, you know, you're part of the public. You're so important. And this guy sitting down at the end is talking to 2 men behind him, and he's picking at his nose, and he's laughing. And I stood there, and the guy heading the committee said, your time has started. I said, no, it hasn't. Not till that man turns around. And I said, I did not drive 75 miles for him to sit down there laughing and carrying on while I'm trying to talk. So he said something to this fella. He turned around, and I said, you can start my time now. And, of course, I went off on a rant. And I told him, I said, how dare you people sit there when you know this is going on? How dare you sit there and refuse to do anything? And I said, as I understand it, calling you out on this, you're going to retaliate against me. So I stepped out from behind the podium, and I said, here I am. Retaliate. Go ahead and get mad. I said, you might as well be mad because I'm incensed. I'm enraged. It shouldn't just be me.
Yeah.
But this thing of going in there and acting like they do, patronizing,
Yeah.
No, that's got to stop. That's
you know what
stop.
I say to them? You know, here's the thing that always gets me in these legislative hearings. They put themselves on a podium 3 or 4 feet above everyone while you're mm-hmm. sitting down there. And what I tell them, I go, listen, you people are public servants.
We are the public.
You are the servant. Conduct yourself like it.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you
but
what.
They aren't, though, Danny. I'm telling you, you are in the presence of Royal Heinies.
Yeah.
These
not,
are
not when
these,
I'm there.
There you go. I just don't. These people work for us, or they're supposed to. Now, the other
correct.
Thing I see wrong in all this, Danny, is we should be able to make these judges, whether it's probate tribunals, whether it's mm-hmm. state court, whatever, federal. They should be forced to campaign. They should be forced to expose their record. You should be
yeah.
able to comment under their candidacy about what they have done. But, of course,
mm-hmm.
we don't do that. We put two candidates on the ballot. Both of them already tapped for the job and in position, but you're told you're voting. So I always,
yeah.
here in Minnesota, we have a write in another candidate. I always write me in. And last year I got 3 votes. And
way to go. Good for you.
There's at least 2 people here that like me. And
you know what? That says a lot, though.
But you know what I'm saying? This is my vote of no confidence. This is me saying these 2 candidates are not acceptable. I don't know anything
exactly.
about them.
Yeah.
And I don't need you selecting a judge for me. I need to do that because I might have to go in front of this person. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't. Danny, here
let me tell
a while
you,
back. Go ahead.
Let me just quickly interject this. I know down in Davidson County, Tennessee, judicial elections are controlled by the Tennessee Bar Association. They, you know what, before this last round in 2014, you never even knew that there was an election, a judicial election going on, because I had raised hell in the court of public opinion. Then they all put out placards and hung a sign or two. But the thing about it is that they all run unopposed. And, you know, the person they want is selected by the Tennessee Bar Association, and that's who ends up on the bench. We're not in control of our judicial elections.
No, not at all. Those people are already selected, and it's just
correct.
Which one. And they're already in position, even when you go into that voting booth. They are already in the job you think you're voting to put them into. It's going to be one of those two. And, you know, the whole system is rigged against us, and this should not happen either. Danny, here a while back, your house was sold.
Correct.
How did they pull that off?
You tell me. The judge had already had supposedly – listen, let me tell you this.
Thank you.
They claimed that they entered a final order and terminated my conservatorship, yet there are 350 docketed entries after the final order. According to their code, the only thing that's entered after the final order is a final accounting. Well, their alleged, you know, what you learned is not only in this legislation, it's not the title of the legislation, it's what's in the legislation.
Yes.
Or in
yes.
this bill. And it's the same thing with court orders. It is not the title of the court order. Make sure you read it, because this alleged final order, and it had final order printed across the top, it was nothing but an interlocutory order, and there are 6 more interlocutory orders entered after this, when leaving my conservatorship open and my brother under oath. And what they did was my own court-appointed attorney and my brother's attorney go to the court, and they've been racking up fees all this time. And the probate judge, 2.5 years after the alleged final order was entered, orders my home sold at auction. The only 2 people that were at this court-ordered auction, which was on the steps of that very courthouse, were my brother's attorney and my court-approved attorney. And my own court-approved attorney not only owns my home and bought it at auction for one-fourth of its appraised value. He is living in my home today and flipping it for over $500,000 profit while he still receives my song royalties. They cast me to the streets. I was homeless, literally legally homeless, for 2.5 years and with no income. And I have had to live by my own wits and my own survival instincts, you know. And it just tells you what bastards these are. They're utterly unhuman,
they're so
evil.
Yeah,
psychopaths.
Yep. These people, you know, when you look at what's happening across the country, and it gets more devastating each story you hear. And I've had judges and officials say to me, well, you know, that's people's version of the story. Yeah, but we have documents. Oh,
yeah.
Well, you know, those can be, they're court. And I'm going to tell everybody again, when you get court documents, do not ask for a certified copy. Because they can put anything on there, leave anything in there, take anything out they want to. You ask for an exemplified copy. And that one, they have to have absolutely everything that has taken place in that court, whether they canceled a hearing, rescheduled it, whatever they did, has got to be on there. It has to be signed by the clerk of court and the judge attesting to its accuracy. And it's a crime if it's incorrect. Excuse me.
Yeah.
So you always want to ask for an exemplified. Now, if you go in, and I have done this, and you ask for an exemplified, they'll go, I don't know what you're talking about. Then why are you in this job? If I know about this, how come you don't?
Thank you.
No, we don't like to do that. I don't care what you like to do. I didn't ask you what you like to do. I said I want an exemplified copy. Well,
when they say they don't like it, they're saying, we don't want the truth to come out.
Exactly. And
go ahead, Marty.
Well,
I'm learning from this. This is important.
Well, and then see, like on that certified docket, like I say, they can put anything in, take anything out, erase it, you know, do whatever
they
want to
do.
Yes. And there's no crime there, supposedly. That could just be a glitch. It could just be human error. Nobody was in. Why are you paranoid? Are you paranoid?
Yeah.
Why did you? Okay, you see how that works. Well, and seeing the other thing I kind of get off on is confronting these people who work in these courts or agencies. And I had one agency person stand on the other side of a counter in a glass window and say to me, I'm going to get you. If it's the last thing I do, I'm going to get you. I'm right out here.
Oh,
come get me.
God. Yeah.
You don't wait. Here I am. And I said, come on out here. I'll peck your eye for you. And, you get to the point, Danny, you get to the point. What really makes me angry is these are our fellow citizens turning on us. These are people saying, I've got a family to support. I have to. So do we all.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to hurt you to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I always ask them, are you paid to be incompetent or did you just come by it naturally? Is that the reason you were hired? Is because you were.
Yeah.
And you can't insult me like that. I wasn't insulting you. I was just asking you a question. And why are you getting upset? Are you paranoid? And you know, I like flipping
they
things
are.
Back on. I really do.
Oh, that's what we have to do is flip it on them.
Yeah. And
you know, one of the things, let me interject this just real quick, Marty.
Sure.
I am constantly hearing about, well, that's just, you know, there are so many examples of good guardianships. Do you know, listen, I've been in it for 10 years. I have yet to hear one example of one good guardianship. But I can tell you personally of hundreds, if not thousands of examples of heinously abusive and exploitative guardianships and conservatorships.
Exactly. And that's something, Danny, I have all these years said, you know, people say, not all guardians are bad. Bring me one. Just one that isn't.
Just one.
One. I haven't gotten one yet. Yeah.
There's nobody. I have yet to run into anybody from Davidson County, Tennessee, going, I am so thrilled that Judge Randy Kennedy put me in a conservatorship. Not one. And for 4.5 years,
this court was reported on. And, you know, and the local newspaper, even though they waited about 2 years before they went on it, it was a worldwide scandal. And in all their reporting, they were unable to bring an example of one good conservatorship. And they did a 2.5-year investigative series that was really important. And not one.
Exactly. And Danny, that's like these GAO reports that come out. Now, the first one I ever viewed was 2010. And it said that they had examined from 5 states, 12 cases. Oh, that's not even a good sample. And but that it was they originally said it was professional guardians who were helping themselves to these estates. Somebody put some pressure on them, and that whole report within a week got flipped and changed.
Mm-hmm.
And every report that's come out since then says it's these greedy family members, and many times it is. Yes, it is. But what happens is like in your own case, you get a greedy family member who's got an attorney and sees an opening to put a wedge in, and start a big her fracas going, and they keep that person cranked up, like in this case, your brother. We'll do this, and we'll do that, and he did this, and he did that, and we're going to get him for it, and blah, blah, blah. And they keep this going, and it's how the system works. They divide the family. They always look for the weakest link, always.
Yeah.
And that's the person that they will represent as the one who needs to take control. And really, the person in control is that attorney, that probate judge, that guardian.
Mm-hmm.
That's who's controlling
mm-hmm.
everything. That's who's making the bulk of the money. Now, the other thing, Danny, in your case, have you ever seen an audit? Has one ever been produced about how much money has been taken from?
Oh, no, absolutely not. You know, and I've tried to get this. You know, they turn in accountings. But listen, mm-hmm. the one thing that became abundantly clear in this 2.5-year investigative series that the Tennessean did on this one probate court is that these accountings are just BS. I mean, the judge rubber stamps them knowing, you know. Listen, in Nashville, that crooked SOB is in on the whole thing. And these accountings that are that come through there aren't worth the paper they're written on. And that's what, you know, people were stealing zillions, millions, literally. And this judge was just rubber stamping everything. And, you know, so yes, when you say audit, absolutely not. There was never an audit. And I tried to get this, and, you know, your own attorney's not working for you. He's working for the bad guys.
Exactly.
Nobody's working for the ward. Nobody, you know, it's supposed to be the best interest of the ward. Nobody is working in the best interest of the ward. One of the many involuntary commitments I had, a fellow patient there, his father was a forensic accountant. And when I was telling his son what was going on, he goes, "You need to talk to my dad." I talked to this this man, took an hour and came and spoke to me. And he said, "Danny," he goes, "this was in California." And he says, "Here's what's going to happen." He goes, "I've testified at many of these conservatorship proceedings. They are going to take you for all you're worth. They're going to clean you out. They're going to leave you without a home to live in. And then all of a sudden, you're going to be determined no longer incompetent, and they're going to hand you back your life completely robbed of everything you worked your life for."
Mm-hmm.
And that's
exactly
what happened. Yeah, but
it
at least
too.
At that point, I knew what was coming.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. This thing about it, the best interest of the ward, that's just, I think, a statement thrown in there to antagonize everybody. Because once you get a bird's eye view of this system, you know the ward is the least of the concerns. It's how to steal what the ward has. That's what it's all about. It's how this is legalized theft. And it's done under the watchful eye of the judiciary. Now, the other thing I found out too about these administrative tribunals is we keep going to like the legislature, and they say, "Oh, because of separation of powers, we can't get into that." And you have to go to the judiciary, and you go to the judiciary. "Oh, under the separation of powers, we can't get in." That's legislative. And they're both telling you the truth and a lie at the same time, because these are executive courts. They come out of the executive office. They are all tied to state agencies. Okay, they're all running under what's called an umbrella agency, which is usually Health and Human Services or some, you know, social services, something. That agency is contracted to the federal counterpart, and that's who's calling the shots, and the money mill starts rolling from there, the funding. So you, when we go to the legislature, they can change, they can write a law and change it, but they don't. And you go to the judiciary, and this has nothing to do with the law, so they can't get in it. And you have to go to your governor, who will fall down, faint, pee their pants, and say, "I have no idea what you're talking about. How dare you come to me and say, you know, that I have, because you're the top man. This is one of your agencies, and this is an organization running underneath it. You're responsible." But see, they don't want to be responsible either. So they don't want you to know that they are responsible. And there again, I called Governor Dayton's office and got a staffer and said, you know, this is what's going on. Now, these are administrative tribunals. And I said, they are operating up under Health and Human Services, which is contracted to the federal Health and Human Services. And we need to get something done here to change this system. Oh, the governor can't do anything. Yes, he can. With a stroke of his pen, he can stop all of this. Well, you know, we'd have to look into this. Why? How many people have to die? How many people have to be warehoused, kidnapped, literally kidnapped? I said, if I came in there and kidnapped you, I'd be up on federal kidnapping charges. And if I took you from there and warehoused you in some hole with people that were part of my little program, I said I could get it for illegal incarceration. You know, for preventing you from leaving. I said, if I went further and took everything you owned, I'd be under the prison for theft. Why aren't these guardians? Why aren't these attorneys? Well,
I'll tell you what, our executive and legislative branches of government live in fear of the judiciary. The branch of government that was meant to be the weakest branch of government, according to our founding fathers, has morphed into the most powerful branch of government. And once again, I'll tell you, all the way to the Supreme Court, it's an organized crime syndicate.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And you can't define it as anything else, Danny. You cannot. Yeah. When you look at the law breaking that occurs in these courtrooms, in these tribunals, clear up it to SCOTUS, the violation of the Constitution on a daily basis, and they do it with impunity and walk away. And they walk away, and everybody's going, wait, that's not right. You can't do that. Oh, yeah, we can. Yeah, we can. And the only remedy I see to this, Nanny, is we need to start a movement to disbar the bar, to break this monopoly up, to take oversight of these people away from their partners in crime.
Bingo.
You know, that has to happen. I had somebody say to me, well, Marty, if you do that, you know, you're going to get common citizens in there, and they don't know anything about the law. Well, first off, in these administrative tribunals, you aren't dealing with law. You can read, can't you?
No, you're not.
You're dealing with code and statute. Get the code, get the statute. You can read and understand
also,
that. That does. Go ahead.
You're dealing with the rules of professional conduct and the rules of the ethics of judicial conduct. You're not dealing with the law when you're talking about governing these people.
Right.
You know,
right.
And that's something that citizens can understand. That's
right.
Why I say we need to replace them with trained citizens.
Well,
oversight committees, oversight boards.
And the person I was talking to at the one particular time said, but Marty, these people, and I love the way they say that, like, you idiot. Okay, but Marty, these people wouldn't know anything about the law. And I said, well, apparently, based on what you yourself have done, neither do you. Because, you know,
very good. Hey, bingo.
You know, Neither do you.
Very
I want to bring
Marty.
Up something else, Danny. And I see this going on all over the place, and people are jumping out and going, Wings, we're joining up with Wings. You need to get a damn grip here. Wings, look who is behind it. Who's behind it? The Bar Association, the National Guardian Association, the College of Probate Judges.
Yes.
Gee, I wonder what Wings is about. This is the dial concept where they bring you into a public meeting and split you up into groups and put you at a table with a facilitator who guides you to the result they want you to reach and try to make you think it was your idea. This is what Wings is. We have raised so much hell about what's going on and what's happening to people that they have formed this community outreach. And it's called Wings. Doesn't that make you feel all soft and fuzzy, Danny? And just gives you the warm willies, doesn't it? And Wings, and they're going to fly in, and they're going to work with the public. Danny, they're concerned, and they're going to work with the public, and they're going to find a way to try to make things better so that you understand the system better. Get away from these people. This is a Trojan horse. This is a and when you get approached like this, damn it, sit down and do some research. Find out who you're talking to. Find out what they are about. What is their agenda? Who are they supporting? Who is financing them? That'll tell you tons right there. But if one more person writes me, Marty, you need to get involved in Wings, I swear my monitor's going to blow up. Don't bother me with this stuff. I've tried to tell people, and they just won't listen. And that, the thing of it is, Danny, everybody thinks I'm crazy, and that's fine, because I am. And but they always, you know, you just go off the deep end, Marty, and you just get crazy, and you just say things. And then they come back a year and a half later and go, I should have listened to you. You were exactly right. Bite me. I don't want to hear it. And, but, you know, you know, there's so many people, and Danny, just like you writing your book, and so many other people have written their books. You write it not as an expose necessarily, but as a warning. As a warning. Look what they did to me. This can happen to you.
Yes.
You know, and people need to pay attention. They need to pay attention and quit sitting there thinking, well, it didn't land on my doorstep, so, you know, it probably isn't. And if I hear one more person say, well, he must have done something wrong. Well, they wouldn't have done that if he hadn't done something wrong.
Yeah.
We've all done something wrong. Doesn't mean you need to be deprived of your life when you haven't committed any crime.
That's what, you know, people that I knew in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous tell me, well, Danny, you relapsed, you know. I'm like, going, that is the most ignorant anti-AA statement I've ever heard. I'm saying, you're saying that because I relapsed, that gives the right for the court to come in and take me for all I've worked my life for? I said, you know, you people are supposed to be standing behind me and beside me, but all you did was turn your back on me, you know?
Well,
and,
because...
But just, you know, reiterating what you said, we must have done something wrong. It doesn't give people the right, you know, these crooks the right to come in and and exploit you and abuse you.
Well, exactly. And if any of us was sinless, we wouldn't be on the planet. You know, we'd be gone.
Yes.
And these same people that do this to you, don't you wonder if they got exposed for all their wrongdoing and every time they backslid on something, how many of them would be walking around out there? Not very many of them. But, you know, and going back again to, you know, just bring me one. Bring me one.
Bring you one. I get it.
Yeah. And with attorneys, we see attorneys, we've seen attorneys who definitely step out there and try to represent their clients and actually try to defend them and fend off this system and what happens to them. This cannibalistic professional organization called the Bar Association, who depends on this stuff for a great deal of its income, eats them alive. They disbar them. They sanction them. They ruin their careers. They destroy their law practice. They absolutely destroy their character. They will plant false stories. They will get on the news and say all kinds of things. And it's to destroy that. It's a lesson. See, don't you go against us, because I want to drive a brand new Mercedes next year. And if you don't quit talking, I might not get to do that. And, you know, We've got to figure out a way to take control of this, to control
yes.
the dialogue, control the
yes.
narrative. And we
yes.
are being shut down and tamped down everywhere we go. So it's shows like this, Luann and Robin that, you know, have their Just Us or faceus.org radio show.
Mm-hmm.
We've got
yeah.
so many people coming up out there and speaking out. We need more. We need
yes,
more.
We
need
do.
Everybody that can get out there and talk. Do it. Do it.
Yes. There needs to be public outcry that is deafening.
Yes. And like I say, you get out there and run your radio show. I've got a couple of emails here, Danny, people asking questions. And this is from Julie
Great.
In Ohio. And she said, with all that's been done to you, she said, Danny, where are you living now? And are you okay?
Yes, I am. And, you know, I'm almost hesitant to say you have to take – thank you, Julie, by the way. And, yes, I am okay. I had to take what they did to me and, you know, for the – at risk of exposing and them doing something to me, what I did was I had no income. They're still getting it. I was homeless. I was living on the streets. So what I did was I took their court order. I went to Social Security and I said, you know what? I don't think I'm a disabled person, but I got a court order here that says I am. Bam. I laid that on them and I got a disability relatively immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the only way I'm surviving. It is the only income that they can't attach.
Now, see, usually they can.
Well, Uncle Sam can. Well, yes,
okay.
they can. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
When I say
yeah.
that, I'm talking about everybody but, you know, probate
yeah.
can. Probate will do anything because they know they can get away with it because they're controlling your money and you can't afford to contest them.
Right,
and
exactly.
And they're protected in the court, the upper courts anyway.
Well, you know, one of the things that what I'm in the process of doing is rewriting this bill so that it actually means something. And I have no illusions, Danny. I know that it's never going to go anywhere, but I'm going to do it anyway because I want people to see what this bill should have looked like had there been an
Great.
Honest intent to stop this system and what's happening to people.
Yeah.
And basically what it gets down to is a cap on, I don't care how big the estate is, you can't take any more than X amount of dollars. You cannot,
no.
by virtue of being declared a war, lose your existence and your rights and protections. If this is, Danny, if this in fact is the case, that you are compromised, incapacitated, incompetent, whatever it is, wouldn't the compassionate thing to do be to secure and further secure your rights and protections to make sure in this disadvantaged state that no one took advantage of you. But instead we see the opposite. They take everything away from you.
Yeah.
Everything.
It's
so that you are left
predatorial,
standing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Utter predatorial proceeding. And it's and nothing but. Make no
yes.
mistake about it. So to answer Julie, just yes again, you know, Julie, I live on this fixed income. It's hand to mouth. I have no luxuries at all whatsoever. I do most of my shopping at Dollar Tree, and that's how I survive.
Wow, geez, this that considering what your estate was worth. That
yeah,
has
I was,
to be
a
hard
I was a
thing
multimillionaire
to...
going in, and I was adjudicated an indigent pauper by the
mm-hmm.
same court.
Okay. We've got a second question here, Danny. And it said, how did you manage to keep your cool when they stole your house and took your property? And the thing I know about that is somebody had to be given what is called a testamentary of power in order
yeah.
to sell your house with that title having your name on it. Somebody was given a testamentary of power. Who gave them that testamentary and who received it?
Well, the court, you know, assumed the power and issued the order to sell my home at auction. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah,
is that answering
I know
the question?
What, when you sell a piece of property, one of the papers you have to sign is a testamentary of power saying that you are the lawful owner of that property.
I never signed anything to that effect.
In these situations, what the court does is they give that power to a third party.
My brother, the attorney, the conservator.
Yeah. And that's who signed your proxy and sold your property. There again, we get into that thing, Danny, called the law of restitution. And I've been doing a lot of background work on that, and we might find that useful. And but the other thing I have seen happening, Danny, is all of these white papers coming out from all these legal eagles at universities and, everywhere else, Harvard, Yale, blah, blah, blah. And they're coming out, and it's about, like, let's say, the immunity doctrine. And it is page after page after page of what looks to be a Supreme Court ruling, because it is the most convoluted, twisted up language I have ever seen. And what it is supposed to do is secure in your mind that these administrative tribunals are somehow constitutional on the one hand, and that that person who's sitting as a judge somehow has the hand of God on them and they can do anything they want because they got a black robe on. I've got a black robe, Danny. Does that mean I can do anything I want? What I'm saying? But we think because these people put this black robe on that somehow they are in some higher state of mind, that they are far more, moral than we are, knowledgeable and everything else. And what you're looking at 99 times out of 100 is probably the biggest crook, thief, deceiving, liar, manipulator, controller that you will ever encounter. Mm-hmm. And they're arrogant. They're arrogant.
Hell yeah. Arrogant.
Set up there and they're arrogant. And I tell you, it may seem unrelated, but and I can't watch this because this woman absolutely brings the vomit up in my throat, is that Judge Judy. That has got to be the most obnoxious. But see, she's put out that the reason that woman's on TV is to cement in the public's mind, to condition them to believe that it's okay for a judge to insult you from the bench.
Yeah.
It's okay for the judge to make scurrilous comments.
That's exactly what it is.
Yes, it's okay.
It's okay for
them
the court to make a judgment without a jury appears.
Yes, yes. You're being conditioned when you watch this heifer. And I can't watch her. I just cannot watch her.
Well, let me tell you this, too. These television shows, all these legal shows, where it's got these attorneys that act ethically and the hoary-headed judge who's dispensing, his judgment and knowledge, unbiased. That's a crock of you-know-what. That doesn't exist, folks. That is a myth. That the American Bar Association is not only sponsoring and supporting, but perpetrating. Mm-hmm. That does not exist. There is no such thing.
The other one is, and I used to like this show, but it over the last 2 years has morphed into nothing but a propaganda machine for this stuff, and that is that we call it Law and Order, but Law and Order, and they pick up on current trends in what the public is doing. They're constantly referring to people who fight back as anarchists. They're anarchists. What are we going to do about these anarchists? And at one point, Fred Thompson, who actually ran for political office, who plays the head judge
Tennessee.
There, pulls the Constitution or some perverted form of it off the wall and says, do you see the word privacy in here anywhere? No. Did I see the word intellect anywhere on you? No, I did not. Okay. But these shows are so blatantly based around things that have happened in the news that it just makes me sick. One episode here recently, there's two attorneys chasing this crazy judge down the hallway, and the one attorney says to her, well, if nothing else, there's jury nullification, which we have a right to. And the judge says, that's illegal. Did you get the message? You don't have the right as a jury to nullify. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. And the other thing is we see, I've seen in a couple episodes where the judge set aside the jury's verdict. They have no authority to do that. That jury is the last word in that courtroom, not that judge.
Mm-hmm.
And but he sets aside because he didn't get the verdict he wanted. And, you know, you look at these things and people are being conditioned. They're being brainwashed so that when they're in this court and these things happen, they think this is normal. This is the way it is. This is how it works. You know, and it is how it works.
Let me tell you the truth about this probate judge in Nashville. He was a wannabe rock and roll singer in high school and college. He was in a band called Purple Haze, and he sniffed glue. And in fact, and I have an affidavit to this effect, by the way, because one of the guys that was in the band with him said he got so high on glue at a rehearsal that he took a knife and stabbed the keyboard player in the chest, and had it not the knife not broken on the keyboard player's chest bone, it would have killed him. And our honorable probate judge would be serving life without parole. And he also got so high on glue that the state police were trying to coerce him out of a tree on the side of the interstate, but he had parents that were always getting him out of trouble. Oh, so then he decided when his rock and roll career didn't work out, and let me tell you this, those wannabe musicians that never were, they're the worst people on the face of the earth. So what did he do? He becomes a lawyer and a judge, and he's in Nashville, Tennessee, Music City, USA, a failed wannabe musician sitting on the bench. And you know where he got his law degree? He got his law degree at this back alley school called Nashville School of Law. I call it Nashville School of Fraud. A law degree from this school is no good outside of the state of Tennessee. It's unrecognized. And he graduated like in the lower half of his class from the Nashville School of Fraud. This is our probate judge in Nashville, Tennessee, folks.
And they're like that all over the country. These people are just basically somebody's drunk brother or cousin that couldn't get a job or... You know, I'll put you over here. You know, Danny, we got about 7 minutes left here. I do need to make one announcement. We are now being syndicated on One Voice Today Radio. We're playing twice a day at noon and at midnight. And I'll take that. Thank you. At 5 and midnight. And I was just on there here this last week with Eric Koppelman for an hour. Just as a promotional. But we'll be on there and streaming out of there. So the audience is getting bigger. More people are listening in. And just as a result, he was playing that episode with me for a few days there in a row. I had tons of people contacting me and said, I didn't know you were out there. That hurt my feelings. That smacked my pride real good. But, you know, the thing is, we're a net-based radio station, and we have worked hard to get the exposure that we've got. And it has simply been the fact that we have hung in here for going on 7 years, just refused to shut up. I did take a hiatus here for a while, and I'm going to say something else while I got a few minutes here, Danny. For those of you who like to spend your time attacking me and sending me ugly emails and calling me on the phone and doing all this stuff, why don't you just bite me? Get over it. I don't care if you like me or you don't like me. I said, I haven't seen none of you run up here and hand me a check. I don't care what you think.
But
you know, if you're going to attack somebody, go after the people on the other side. You know,
exactly.
I haven't done anything to you. I haven't done a thing to you. So,
Ask you this. Will this show be, what's the word I'm looking for? Will somebody be able to hear our show tonight? Will it be archived?
Yes, it's archived. It'll be available in perpetuity. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/ Marty Oakley and scroll right down through the menu there and pick out whatever show you want to listen to at any time of the day or night, as many times as you want to. You can go, they're always available, Danny. They're always available.
Okay.
And
may I say this also, Marty?
If you want to get a copy of my book, Fugitive from Injustice, it's for sale at Amazon.com. Just put in Fugitive from Injustice at Danny Tate, and there it is. It's for $10. And folks, I hope you can support the cause and, and get a copy of this book. And buy a copy for a friend.
The other thing you can do, too, is go to your local booksellers like Barnes & Noble and ask them if they have it. And if enough people request it, they'll start carrying it.
Yes.
So, you know, that's another way that we can help, like with your book, Danny, and others who have written books.
Thank you.
Is go to these booksellers and request it. Ask them if they have it. They log every bit of that in, and after they get so many requests, they start stocking the book. So that will help get the book out, too. So, the thing is, people, when somebody goes to all the trouble to write this book and write any book on this, for God's sake, support him. I get so tired of people saying, shut up. You know, if it was you, and I always get from these people talking about, the part about me, I've made thousands, Danny, thousands, as I understand it, off doing these shows, just thousands. And when I get this kind of mail and I say to people, I haven't made a dime. I heard that you were, and you're just making money off of other people's misery. My response to that is, these are usually people that wouldn't raise their hand unless you paid them.
Yeah.
But I'm supposed to sit here, and I have, because I didn't get in this to make money. I got in this because it was wrong.
Thank you, Marty. Thank you so much. I've got one more request. For the people that are out there, and I don't care if you're especially in Nashville, but all over the world, will you call Broadcast Music Incorporated? I talked about them earlier, BMI. They are one of the powerful organizations, and they control the royalties of the songwriters. Will you call at 615-401-2000, that's 615-401-2000, and ask for Jody Williams. He is there. He runs the Nashville offices. And ask him why BMI is still giving away my royalties to these crooks. And you know what? I've known Jody for 35 years, and he's a good old boy, the bad kind.
Uh-huh.
And, he's gonna cower to the system, and he's going to tell you, well, there's a court order. Well, it's their job as my attorney, in fact, as their contract says, to fight this court order and get the royalties to the songwriter. When Francis Preston was alive, this would have never happened. Please make that call, friends. Thank you.
I will do it. I will do it. Yes, I will.
All right.
We've got about 2 minutes left here. I want to thank everybody for tuning in this evening. Thank you for those of you who sent an email. And we do encourage that during the show. It's a lot easier than trying to take phone calls, quite honestly. And for everybody that's on the board listening by phone, I truly appreciate that. And I'm sorry to those who couldn't get on the board. And remember, in the future, if you want to call in and speak to our guest, when you dial 917-388-4520, press 1 immediately. That flags me and lets me know you want to talk. We've gotten about 90 seconds left here. I want to say goodnight to everybody. And the other thing I want to do is this. I want to play our theme. I just love this. I'm so proud of this, Danny. I can't stand it.
All right.
As we leave the show, Danny wrote this for us. And like I say, it gives me a great deal of pride to play it. And so we'll say goodnight to everybody and enjoy the music.